Welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My guest is North Carolina poet Anthony Abbott, who has written a tribute to North Carolina writers who've passed away, and he's mixed it with music from Dvorak's New World Symphony, creating what is a powerful and memorable combination of words and music and feeling that just kind of knocked me over. I want you to Tony Abbott is my guest, but before we talk to him, I want you to hear this.
Afternoon. I lie in the long grass and wait for words. The still white clouds mock me. Then, unexpectedly, the sound of music. I sit up. From an open window upstairs, the clear sounds of Dvorak. I know these notes like I know the timbers of my own soul. Yes. The English horn sings the theme and sings it yet again with the bass clarinet. And then the strings enter like a prayer. Take me home, Lord, take me home. And now the clarinets and the horns like faith answer. Then the strings whisper softly, yes, and again, yes. I see Graham Jackson, tears running down his black cheeks. Graham Jackson in full dress uniform, playing Going Home for his beloved Franklin Roosevelt. And then the farmers, young and old, black and white, all of them poor, who loved the only man they had ever known as President of the United States. Hundreds standing on the hills of Georgia and the Carolinas, watching the train go by with the body of their lost leader, watching the train take him home. Going home, say the English horns again, and then the clarinet returns. Here I am, listening, images surfacing, the trim brick walks of my beloved town, the green hills to the west, rising and falling like the strings, the waves on the outer banks crashing like the cymbals, then sliding back like the clarinets. I see the faces of my friends. I hear the voices of the writers who have gone before, their words rising again, dark-skinned and light, old and young, men and women, children of the valleys and the mountains, children of the coast and the Piedmont. I am here, they say. I have made the path for you, and I am still here, my words as true as the rock face of cold mountain. The music soars, and for a moment there is light, the whole orchestra together in hope. Then the English horn alone, mournful, and the strings so soft, almost a whisper. The strings carry our love over the hills to the sea. The horns offer it to the sky, and the strings set it aloft. It is done. They have gone home. And who and what they are, we carry within ourselves. The evening comes. I rise from the grass and walk toward the open window.
What you just heard is Tony Abbott's tribute to North Carolina writers, and it was an extraordinary, Tony, good gosh, again, it knocked it off my every time I hear it, it knocks me off my feet. And I first heard this at the North Carolina Writers Conference.
That's right. Yeah.
Which typically there is a tribute to the writers who passed on to the great.
Right. No, that's correct.
But this is more than just a poem.
Oh yes. I was asked this year to write the memorial poem for the writers who have died during the year before, and also for all the writers, really, of North Carolina, to whom we pay tribute at that moment in the conference. And I knew I wanted to do this from the time that I was asked. What had happened? I was in England in 1988, and I heard the Largo, which is the second movement from Dvorak's New World Symphony. I heard the whole New World Symphony played at sunset in Ely Cathedral. And when the Largo was played, and you know that it became the song Going Home. And so the references in the music to Graham Jackson, who was one of the first to play it, playing it for Roosevelt's funeral.
Now, who was Graham Jackson?
Graham Jackson was an army officer, an African American army officer who loved Franklin Roosevelt, and he played it on the accordion.
Oh, wow.
While the funeral, the hearse, the casket was being moved from what is it, Warm Springs, Georgia, to the hearse to put it on the train to take the body of Roosevelt back to Washington, and then eventually back to Hyde Park, and so Graham Jackson loved Roosevelt, and Roosevelt loved him, and he was playing with the tears coming down his cheeks, and it's an extraordinary image. I read this, and I was doing research on this. I read a biography of Roosevelt in order to get this, to make sure I got this right. So originally what happened is I had heard this in Ely Cathedral, and it made me think about going home to North Carolina too, and I was thinking of the fact that my mother and my daughter and my grandmother are all buried in North Carolina. My daughter in Davidson, my mother and my grandmother in Charlotte. And I felt like the music was taking me home to them. And I knew I had to write a poem. So I wrote a poem about this and never finished it. I was never satisfied with it. And then I realized the only way I could make this poem work is if I had the music. I wrote the poem without the music. So I went to Jennifer Foster, who's brilliant at WDAV, and I said,
A classical public radio in Ed Davis.
Exactly, the classical public radio.
Where you're a professor emeritus.
Where I'm a professor emeritus. And she, I explained what I wanted to do, and she said she could help me with this. So we practiced it a couple of times, and we had to take the Largo, which I think is in actuality something like 13 minutes long, and get it down to 4.5 minutes so that the music would fit with the words. And we worked with the pauses and which music from the Largo went with which portions. And as I was rewriting it, I realized that I needed to get my mother and my daughter and my grandmother out of the poem, and I needed to get Ely Cathedral out of the poem, because now it was going to become a memorial poem for North Carolina writers and not a memorial poem for my mother. And so I started to feel that sense in the second half of the poem, when I started talking about my town, my precious town, Davidson, the brick sidewalks of my town, and then I was thinking about the Piedmont and the mountains and the coast and the writers of all different ages and ethnic backgrounds from all these different parts of the state, and I began to feel the presence of those writers who replaced my family. And I was thinking that in the poem, I'm going home to them, and that they have all gone home, and we love them and we remember them, and then we carry their spirit with us. We take what they have done and we move on. And at the end of the music, at the end of the poem, we have the sense in which the poet comes back to himself. And it's interesting at the end because he hears the music from a window at the beginning, and at the end he rises and walks to the window where he's heard the music. He will go up and he will begin writing himself.
So it's a tribute, but it's also in a way a description of the writing process.
Yes, I think that's very true. It's because, you know, emotion is so powerful, and for me, in a way, it's the music that engenders the poem. So the writing process is the process of listening to the music and letting your spirit be moved by what the music is trying to tell you, and then finding words that the music is expressing without words. I like that. You know, you're putting two different art forms together, and I think what's so wonderful about this is that music and poetry belong together. Poetry in itself is a kind of music. And so I wanted to get the music of my voice, reading the words I had written together with the music of Dvorak, to make a new creation. And I'm thinking, well, if this really works, you know, we should do more of this.
Well, it is for we're going to listen to it again in a minute, for lots of reasons, including one, it's powerful, and I want us to listen to it after we've had this little bit of explanation.
Yeah, and there's one more thing I should tell you, because I think it's important, and that is that if you listen to the description in the language in the first part of the poem, particularly the description of the music and the instruments of the orchestra and how they are working, I owe a great debt to Jennifer Foster for helping me with that.
Well, I'm interested in that process, and I think, you know, I'll tell you where I start, which is is with church music, you have a melody, and then you write you have a notion of what is moving you, and then you try to merge the rhythms of what you're thinking with the pattern of the music.
Absolutely,
in the song. Now, that's not exactly what you did, because what you and Jennifer did was to be moved by the music. Your rhythms are clearly influenced by it. But if it didn't exactly fit, you just took the part of the music that did fit.
Yes, absolutely, because there's too much music. I mean, you can't play the whole piece. The whole piece is 11 or 13 minutes. So when we tried to match the music to the portions of the poem that were appropriate for that music. So it starts out with the going home theme, and then there's a little break when it rises to a swell, and then there's a second theme. And then when Graham Jackson comes in, we start with the second theme, and then it comes back again at the end to the main theme. So what it is really a condensation of the music.
Well, you mentioned that the first part of the poem is an interplay between the voice of the poet and the music of the symphony,
yes,
and including calling on. I mean, the poet calls on the strings and calls on the horn,
and it comes.
And the in a way that you wonder, I mean, and you must have thought about this a lot, is now a poet would want his or her own words to evoke those those themes.
Sure.
And do you think, I mean, will your poem
well,
do
they
that
do.
Way? Can you do it without Dvorak? I mean, will the poem work?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I could read the poem just as a poem, and I think it would work because, but it wouldn't be as good. I mean, it wouldn't be as good. There's a lot going on now with this, and I'm now working with a cellist in Davidson to take some of my poems and read them with cello accompaniment, because I think the cello is such a remarkable instrument. Because I do think that you can work both ways. You can work from the music to the poem, but you can also work from the poem to the music. And therefore, I could read my poem out loud and listen to her play as she's feeling the music of the language and creating the cello music to go with it.
She's making up the music, or is she drawing
either,
her
own? Either or both, yeah. She could be writing music for it, or she could be playing music, for example, Bach, you know, to go with the poem, and it enhances the poem, and it creates a more, I mean, the first time.
I tell you what, Tony, let's do this. Let's talk some more about sort of other things that are happening. But while I've got fresh in my mind your discussion of how this particular poem, a tribute, a recollection in memory of North Carolina writers, came about, I'd like to hear it again before we take the break. So we'll listen to your poem and the accompanying music that you selected from Dvorak's symphony, and then we'll take a break and come back and talk some more.
Okay. Afternoon. I lie in the long grass and wait for words. The still white clouds mock me. Then, unexpectedly, the sound of music. I sit up. From an open window upstairs, the clear sounds of Dvorak. I know these notes like I know the timbers of my own soul. Yes. The English horn sings the theme and sings it yet again with the bass clarinet. And then the strings enter like a prayer. Take me home, Lord, take me home. And now the clarinets and the horns like faith answer. Then the strings whisper softly, yes, and again, yes. I see Graham Jackson, tears running down his black cheeks. Graham Jackson in full dress uniform, playing Going Home for his beloved Franklin Roosevelt. And then the farmers, young and old, black and white, all of them poor, who loved the only man they had ever known as President of the United States. Hundreds standing on the hills of Georgia and the Carolinas, watching the train go by with the body of their lost leader, watching the train take him home. Going home, say the English horns again, and then the clarinet returns. Here I am, listening. Images surfacing, the trim brick walks of my beloved town, the green hills to the west, rising and falling like the strings, the waves on the outer banks crashing like the cymbals, then sliding back like the clarinets. I see the faces of my friends, I hear the voices of the writers who have gone before, their words rising again. Dark-skinned and light, old and young, men and women, children of the valleys and the mountains, children of the coast and the Piedmont. I am here, they say. I have made the path for you, and I am still here, my words as true as the rock face of Cold Mountain. The music soars, and for a moment there is light, the whole orchestra together in hope. Then the English horn alone, mournful, and the strings so soft, almost a whisper. The strings carry our love over the hills to the sea. The horns offer it to the sky, and the strings set it aloft. It is done. They have gone home, and who and what they are we carry within ourselves. The evening comes. I rise from the grass and walk toward the open window.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. We, first of all, if you joined us late and heard the Anthony Abbott's poem and the music from Dvorak, we're going to, at the end of this program, we're going to listen to that one more time. But Tony, before we took the break, you and listened to the, I don't know, the symphonic poem.
Yeah.
Is that what we're going to call it? I don't know
sure.
what to call it. We were talking about how this experiment and the results have led you to try some other things, including setting some of your other poetry to music. And what will that lead to? And what do you recommend to other poets? And where are we going with this?
Well, you know, there are a number of poets, I think, who are doing this. And there's a guy, wonderful poet in the Charlotte area named Larry Sorkin, and he has a cellist who works with him whose name is Tanya Beckler, and they do programs around the state of poetry and cello. And what he does is he reads his own poems, but he also reads poems by other poets, which I like very, very much. You know, poems by Sharon Olds or Mary Oliver or Galway Connell or W.S. Merwin. I mean, really beautiful poems with the cello accompaniment. And so I think that I did a conference up in the mountains several years ago, and I read several of my poems accompanied by an Indian flute, and the flute music was just gorgeous. And
Tony,
I like this very much. I mean, I think it's not easy.
You've got two people from different
sure.
traditions. Sometimes they would work together hand in glove, but it even in that case, the musician brings something in a discipline, and the poet brings something else, and so there has to be some give and take.
Yes, I mean I'm not an expert on this. I've done very little of
Good.
It,
well,
and I hope to do more of it. What this Dvorak experiment encourages me to do, because you're so moved by it, and people at the conference were so moved by it that it makes me think I got to do more of this. But it's interesting. In this case, it was my experience of listening to the music that created the poem.
That gave the idea of the poem.
Of the idea of the poem. It was transformed mm-hmm. because when I was given the commission of writing a poem about North Carolina poets, writers who had died, I said to myself, this poem is already doing that in a way, but it needs to be rewritten in order
to be refocused.
Refocus.
When you started thinking about the project, what point did you say, hey, I was inspired by this music, I think I'll use the music?
That was when I was asked to write the poem for the North Carolina Writers Conference. When I was asked to write the memorial poem, I said, what will I do? And then I said, oh, my Lord, I've got to use the music.
So I'll reorient the poem.
So I went and I also did some more research on Graham Jackson. Because I remember that Going Home had been played as part of Roosevelt's funeral, and it's always associated with Roosevelt and with the death of Roosevelt. And so, and I thought Going Home was an old African-American spiritual, and I was told by several people that actually Going Home was written by Dvorak first, and that it later became an African-American spiritual, right. And so that the Dvorak music had words set to it. And I love the image of the farmers standing on the hills of Georgia and the Carolinas as the train goes by. And I was so moved by that image. And I thought, oh, my gosh, I got to get that in the poem. And then I started with the geography of the state, and trying to feel that, listening to the music and trying to think to myself, where in the music should these words go? So it was a process. I mean, it was definitely a process, and I found it very exciting. And also to work with a person as skilled in music as Jennifer, because a lot of the description of the instruments and how they function and where they come in, I owe to her, because I don't know enough about music to do that without help.
Well, it's a wonderful combined effort. So, and if those of you who are listening joined us late, we're gonna take a break. I'm gonna then talk to Tony a little bit about some of his other recent work, including his new book, New and Selected Poems, from 1989 through 2009. But at the end of the program, we're gonna play this great poem and music from Dvorak, all combined one more time. All right, right now we're gonna take a break. Tony Appman, and I'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My guest is Anthony S. Abbott. I call him Tony Abbott. He's a professor emeritus at Davidson College and an honored poet in this state and around the country. Tony, and I would say a acclaimed and award-winning novelist as well.
Thank you.
Leave Me Hanging Hope was a book that I enjoyed featuring on North Carolina Book Watch, and we talked about it, of course, on WCHL as well. But you have a brand new book that brings together your recent work, your poetry, your favorite poems from some previously right. published and some brand new ones.
Exactly. Somebody said, "Well, is this Tony Abbott's greatest hits album?" And the answer is yes. In poetry, most poets will do a new and selected poems about every 10 to 15 to 20 years, bringing together the poetry of a period and celebrating it, so that a person could buy one volume and get highlights from, basically, in this case, my first four books, and then new poems from 2009. And so I felt it was a particularly appropriate time to do this, because the 2009 is the 20th anniversary of my first book, The Girl in the Yellow Raincoat.
And you include that poem.
And I include that poem. And that's kind of been my signature poem, the poem by which I'm best known, and a poem that resonates with a great many people.
Well, I'm not much of a reader, but I wonder if you'd read that poem for us.
Sure.
I mean, I'm not much of a listener of readers on the radio, but this is a powerful poem, and it raises all sorts of questions about poetry, about images, about you, and who is the girl, actually. You've handled 1,000 questions about this. So read us the poem.
The girl in the yellow raincoat waits on the sidewalk outside my window. The flower in her hair is wet. She stands very still, her eyes focused upward on some object I cannot see. She does not move, but she smiles slightly. Perhaps she plays the cello, and she is humming Bartok silently, making the bow ripple with her tongue against her teeth. Or maybe she waits for a bus to take her to her lover. Or she has read a letter from Paris or Istanbul, and she smells coffee and chestnut steam roasted. And she hears in the cobbled streets the cries of vendors under the aged curves of bridges. Perhaps she is just a girl standing in the rain by a stone bench in the early morning while the street shines. It is nothing, you argue. Then why do I weep? And why are there splinters in my palms? And why do I stand here long, long after she is gone?
Well, it takes us back to this theme that we started with, and that is poetry set to music, because you've got some music that you
I've got a cello.
Yeah,
and I'm working on that right now. We're working with a cellist to create some music for a reading of the poem with, since there's already a cello in the poem, it's going to cry out for a cello accompaniment.
Well, Tony, I wish we had time to talk about the new poems, and maybe we can just squeeze a little bit of time for you to tell us how your poetry of 2009 is different or more mature, less mature, or focused differently than the girl in
yeah.
the ring.
You know, each book has its own rhythm. The cover of the book has autumn leaves on it, and the tone of the new poems is autumnal in the sense. And one of my favorite poems among the new poems is a poem called Blood Red of Late October in the South. I love the rhythm of that. Blood Red of Late October in the South.
Maybe you better read it.
And that is a poem about the preciousness of life, and it seems to me to be autumn's beauty is particularly poignant because it's almost gone, and I think as we age, we're more aware of the poignance of that beauty which is still here, but is that we're moving toward winter.
I'm going to get you to find that poem. I think it's towards the end of the new poems, and it.
It's actually here, and it's not a long poem. It's only 16 lines.
Well, I just had some questions about it in terms of the Southern connections, and were these Southern connections seen by an outsider or an insider?
Yeah. Well, you want me to read it,
yeah.
or you want me to?
Yeah,
do you want
it?
Blood red of late October in the South. And from the cemetery to the college campus on the hill, the leaves bathe my eyes. I turn each corner into dazzling surprise. In my mind's eye, she walks toward me. I show her my favorite tree. I pluck three leaves for her and watch as she carries them away. This is newfound grace. And in the space where sadness once lay, the small white flower of hope grows. In the South, October lingers. The gold sun glances off the trees. November will come with its cold rain soon enough. I know. I turn the dazzle inward and down. It courses through the veins and lofts me toward the breathless light.
Well, you know, as well you know, Fred Chappell wrote the introduction forward to your poems and lavished enthusiastically praise for your work, so full of variety, so valiant with reminiscence, so urgent with love, so colorful with imagery, and so affirmative with statement, all of which I think he's maybe focused on that poem that you just read to us. But the other thing that he said was that your poetry pushed us to silence.
Yeah.
Was he right about that?
You know what what he means by that is that language is always inadequate. Language is what we have to try to talk about those things which are deepest in life. But those things which are deepest and most powerful elude language, and we're always trying to find a metaphor or an image or a musical note to describe that which is indescribable, to find language which pushes the limits. And so sometimes you are reduced to silence because that which you feel or wish to say cannot be said, and yet you try to say it anyway.
Well, we have to take a quick break if we're going to come back and listen one more time to your extraordinary gift to us. We're visiting with Tony Abbott. He and I'll be right back after this short break. Well, welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin, and my guest has been Tony Abbott. We promised you, for those of you who joined us late and missed the wonderful memorial poem combined with the Dvorak symphony that Tony gave us and has described for us and helped us to understand better, I wanted to hear it one more time, and we've got just enough time to hear this. Tony Abbott, thank you so much.
You're very welcome. I'm very glad to be here. Thank you, D.G.
Listen to your poem one more time.
Afternoon. I lie in the long grass and wait for words. The still white clouds mock me. Then, unexpectedly, the sound of music. I sit up. From an open window upstairs, the clear sounds of Dvorak. I know these notes like I know the timbers of my own soul. Yes. The English horn sings the theme and sings it yet again with the bass clarinet. And then the strings enter like a prayer. Take me home, Lord, take me home. And now the clarinets and the horns like faith answer. Then the strings whisper softly, yes, and again, yes. I see Graham Jackson, tears running down his black cheeks. Graham Jackson in full dress uniform, playing, going home for his beloved Franklin Roosevelt. And then the farmers, young and old, black and white, all of them poor, who loved the only man they had ever known as President of the United States. Hundreds standing on the hills of Georgia and the Carolinas, watching the train go by with the body of their lost leader, watching the train take him home. Going home, say the English horns again, and then the clarinet returns. Here I am, listening. Images surfacing, the trim brick walks of my beloved town, the green hills to the west, rising and falling like the strings, the waves on the outer banks crashing like the cymbals, then sliding back like the clarinets. I see the faces of my friends. I hear the voices of the writers who have gone before, their words rising again. Dark-skinned and light, old and young, men and women, children of the valleys and the mountains, children of the coast and the Piedmont. I am here, they say. I have made the path for you, and I am still here, my words as true as the rock face of Cold Mountain. The music soars, and for a moment, there is light, the whole orchestra together in hope. Then the English horn alone, mournful, and the strings so soft, almost a whisper. The strings carry our love over the hills to the sea. The horns offer it to the sky, and the strings set it aloft. It is done. They have gone home. And who and what they are, we carry within ourselves. The evening comes. I rise from the grass and walk toward the open window.